Please lead us in the pledge.
My pleasure. Could you please rise, face the flag, put your hand over your...
Okay.
I have a flag in my wallet here. Just look at this. And follow with me, please. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands. I don't know what happened to the flag. Thank you.
I guess we could have had Russell bring one up on the screen maybe or something, but
the Waller one was a little small.
Yeah, that was a first.
Yeah, and hopefully a last.
There was no action taken in closed session. Student representative to the board, Adeline Garcia Orozco. Mr. Cena?
Adeline, the student representative to the board is each semester. So this semester, a Lyndhurst student served in that capacity. Next semester, it'll be a Marysville High School student. And then in the fall of next year, a Marysville Charter Academy for the Arts student. And tonight, Adeline, it's finals week. And lots of activities going on at the high school, so she's not here. But we do have an award, and I'm just going to read it, and I'll present it to Mr. Eckhart. Adeline Garcia Orozco, Lyndhurst High Student Representative, thank you for your outstanding service to the Marysville Joint Unified School District Board of Trustees, serving as the student representative for the first semester of the 2019-20 school year. Your willingness to attend the board meetings to update the Board of Trustees on activities at the various school sites is greatly appreciated. Signed, all the Board of Trustees. So thank Adeline for us, Mr. Eckhart.
Thank you, Mr. Cena. Thank you, Mr. Eckhart. Next, we have a school report, Oliverst Elementary School. Mr. Greger?
Thank you, Russell. Thank you, board members and assistant superintendent and superintendent, for allowing me the opportunity to serve the students of Oliverst Elementary. I'd like to first recognize we have a couple staff members here. First grade teacher, Ms. Kelly Bilski. Say hi. And sixth grade teacher, John Green. Thank you, guys. And I have two really important people for me personally that came tonight for the first time since I've been doing this for 16 years. My wife and my son are here in the very back. You may stand up and say hi. Hi. Yay. Thank you for coming. I really appreciate them coming out tonight. Just a little bit of overview and kind of things that we're going through. Oliverst Elementary, we're kind of going through some transitions. As you know, I'm the fourth principal now in 5 years. We're going to start just a little bit about kind of the things that we're doing and going to be to do need to do. I'm not going to go through your verbatim, what I sent you in the packet, because I know you read those and take all the time to go through them. Seriously, we do need to continue to grow. One of the areas that we went down in is our proficiency of students in ELA and math went down last year. 91% of our kids are actually not proficient or advanced in math, and 75% in ELA. So that was something that we're going to work on as a staff. What we do hope to do is we're looking to add some more preschools next year, and then also working with the county to do the same with Yuba County. We do have room to grow, and that is one of the benefits of being at a school that has kind of had a little bit of a downturn for a little bit, is that some of the families have went away, and we want to bring them back. And so our goal as a staff is to find ways to grow, and some of that is to include the county and then see if we can grow with the preschool. Our goal with that would be to continue to grow from the bottom up and not from the top down, because sixth graders tend to leave the next year. We'd like to see if we can get and keep some of our preschoolers to become kindergartens. Right now we have 4 preschools that attend our site, 3 in the morning and 1 in the afternoon, and then 2 preschools through the county through Goldfields. And so that is something that we're going to continue to do. What we have been doing, though, this year is we've been partnering with the maintenance department, and I want to thank especially Doug Trower for walking the campus with me and taking the time to go through our campus and building some of the broken pieces that we've had. We had a lot of toilets that weren't working. We had areas where things were not being taken care of, basic maintenance, and he walked the campus with me, took the time, and we've been able to get maintenance out there, and we're starting to go through and assess our needs, some of them being our grounds, paint, and we've talked about that hopefully this summer, and getting our blacktop done is another one that's supposed to be on for us to happen. With that, we've gone through, we had bathrooms that were not flushing toilets, P-traps missing, a lot of just minimal things, and immediately we were able to go through and fix that, cut down trees also that were rotted and dying, areas with holes, swamp area like with ground. So I do appreciate all the teams working together to build that. Some of the things we've done that are fun. Ookie Spooky Night. I learn something new every year. We have 2 things that go on religiously at Oliver's. One is Ookie Spooky Night, and the other one is the Day at the Garden. So if you get a chance, Ookie Spooky Night next year, we tried to do that on during the fall festival time of the year, around October 30th, 31st. We ended up having over 500 parents and kids show up for Ookie Spooky Night, and it was a great success. All the money that we earned actually goes to our 5th and 6th grade students to go to Shady Creek. This year we are sending 5th and 6th grade. Because of it being a 5th grade standard, we're making that transition to all the 5th grade, and we did not want to not include 6th grade this year because they didn't get the chance last year, so both groups will be going this year. So we're really excited about that, and we were able to pay for a lot on that down payment to move for our kids. Some of the things that we're working on as a staff is we're working on our passion and our purpose, and that is moving towards our growth. What we've done this year is I believe in sometimes you have to go slow to go fast. With that, I mean we started with building our mission, and now we're at the vision state, and then our shared beliefs and what we're going to do in our what we call shared commitments. We started off the year kind of just at basics and going through what do we want and what are we going to do. Not about Rob, it's not about me, as you guys know, it's about us as a staff at Oliverhurst Elementary. And what we did is we actually are starting a process of building that. And I'm going to go into that a little bit deeper about our goals and our missions and where we are. One of the things that did happen this year, and I know that the board's kind of interested in, is we've worked with Yuba Water Agency. And our field trip, we took our 4th grade classroom, and every student that wanted to go went. Yuba Water Agency paid for that. They paid for our field trip. They paid for our busing, provided just a top-notch time. I was actually able to go on it, so it was a great experience. While I was sitting there with a 4th grader, and out of a 4th grader's mouth, and you know how long they've been living, he goes, "This is the best day of my life." And I thought, you know, for 10 years of age, I'll bet that is the best day of his life. Because I can tell you, this is my 27th year in education, and that was the most enjoyable field trip I've ever been on. And I can say that after 27 years, that I enjoyed it just because of the hands-on experience, to be out in the fresh air, to see the salmon literally moving below you. And they would swim right upstream while we were going down on the river. The kids were just googling and screaming, "Did you see it?" And other kids, "No, where is it?" And they're pointing to something. "It's not there anymore. I swear it was there." And so it was just a great opportunity for the kids. They got to see the whole ecosystem. They studied about it. They were able to understand how the watershed works, where we get our water from, and how the process took place. And so I can't give enough kudos and say thank you. Thank you for board and for all of you superintendents and allowing our kids to go on this. But I can just tell you from a firsthand experience, it was phenomenal. And I highly recommend that we continue to do that. And I hope all of our fourth graders and get that experience through the years, kind of like we started with Shady Creek and Wood Creek. Not Wood Creek. What was it called before? Woodleaf. Thank you, Tammy. Woodleaf. It's just been a great thing to pass on to our kids, and what a wonderful time. I can't again tell you how exciting it was. So back to kind of where we started from and our goals. We talked about our mission, and I'm going to put that up there. Our number one goal is to help all our students grow. And we went through the process, and it takes a lot of massaging and getting everyone, and our teachers that are here can tell you, it took months to get to our mission and get everybody to buy in and say, yes, this is us, and this is what we're doing. We're saying all eagles soar in a positive, safe, and supportive community and fly high. On top of that, one of our staff members, because not only did we invite yard duty, we invited clerical staff, secretaries, we had all of our paraeducators in the morning when we did our buyback day, they were able to put input. They said, how come we don't put that in Spanish? Well, I don't know. Well, that's a great idea. And so one of the things, and forgive my Spanish, we did put it in there. And so we put todas las águilas de Olivers se ascienden en una comunidad positiva, seguro y solidaria. Vuelta alto. And so one of the things that we're going to continue to do is grow not in just one area, but every area. And what we're doing is we're taking each of those words and we are defining what they mean to us. And that's what we call our collective commitments and our vision. I say it a lot of times. It's those of you from the 80s and grew up with that. If you remember Wendy's, Where's the Beef? Or Burger King, Have It Your Way. Or many of you remember Folgers, Good to the Last Drop. You remember those things. They have catchy words and they things like that. That's what we're trying to do, is keep it simple with the mission. The vision is how we get there. We are what we're going to do and how we go about it. It's what we hope to become. The collective commitments are what we, as a staff, everybody, parents, and all those, what we're committed to doing. So far, we've got down to we've got three visions that we're going to mold into one. And I'm just going to read you a couple of things that the teachers, this is what they have come up with as a staff also. Olivers Elementary is a community where all students are engaged to strive for academic, social, emotional growth. Our goal is to develop relationships with our family, staff, and students to create a community where students are empowered to discover their strengths, to work towards achieving their future goals. We set high expectations for all students and share the belief that all children can be successful. So going back to what does the all mean, this is what the vision is. We're going to start defining that. Another one of the three, and I won't read all of them. Olivers Eagles will be driven to meet their short and long-term goals. We will provide every eagle with a welcoming, safe, and accountable atmosphere. We strive to build a positive community that allows staff, students, and parents to develop relationships that support all students' academic, social, and emotional growth. And again, those are the things, and there's more, and we're going to meld all that together to get our vision. And then we had another group, as they were doing that, they were developing our collective commitments, and that's what we agree to do. Olivers is committed to academic excellence. Olivers is committed to common behavioral expectation and respect for diversity. Olivers is committed to providing opportunities for enrichment activities. Olivers is committed to maintaining open, effective communication with staff, students, and community. We assess and use data to inform instruction. We will be creating positive relationships between staff, students, parents, and the community. We will work on a school-wide behavioral and academic expectations. We will have a willingness to grow and develop as educators. We will use technology as a tool to enhance all areas of curriculum, and we are committed to providing opportunities for co-curricular activities to further develop our life skills. So you can kind of see how we're starting to meld together, and that's where you can look at our mission of Eagle Soar. Well, it's through academic excellence. It's through community involvement. It's through us looking at the data and using it to help our students grow. When we look at the safe and supportive community, getting the community buy-in, getting the parents involved, getting students to take care of one another and having positive character, we're using the PBIS model. And then ultimately, what does fly high mean? That means shoot for the stars. And the kids are going to be held accountable and working to that every day in what we do. So those are just a few of the things that we're doing. We will, as I said, continue to make our growth to see our proficiency grow, and advancement in math and ELA. And these are just some of the things that we've been doing on site and this time of the year, a few of the artwork projects that are going on in the classrooms. If you can't tell, that bottom right-hand corner, that is a reindeer. Just for those of you that might not, sure yet, that is from our kindergartners. And then the last part is, I just want to thank you for the opportunity to serve. And I am very thankful for the staff that we have and the people that are taking on the commitments and growing as a group. And I'm so happy to be a part of that. And it says a lot, and I appreciate the two teachers that are here, but they can attest to all the great things that we as a staff are continuing to look for and to grow as a group. So, questions that you guys have for me and anything from the board?
Any comments or questions from board?
I have a comment. I would just like to say thank you for your presentation. It was very nice. And I have had an opportunity to go and see the great things that you are doing at your school. And I know that it's all going to come together. And I hope that at the next presentation, we can see how your test scores did soar. I wish you the best.
I'm believing for that, Susan. I really appreciate that opportunity. And for any of you that have come out and continue to come out, we'll walk you through what we're doing. And it's just a great opportunity to see the staff kind of mold together and take on ownership. And that's some of the things that we're building as relationships, both with students and each other. And so I'm excited to see that. I mean, obviously that's why I chose to go. And when I was asked, I was more than willing. And I think it's a great opportunity for Oliverhurst Elementary. Thank you.
Any other comments? Oh.
Mr. Greger, I want to thank you for your presentation. I love your energy, and I hope that it is infectious for your staff and your students. So thank you again.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Mr. Ellison. It's working together as a team, and you know that. It's not about a person. It's about all of us. And that's really our staff can attest, and anybody on our campus, it's really building that so that it's not about someone. So as you've seen in our years, administrators come and go. It's not about that. I want them to buy into their beliefs so that whoever comes in, they say, no, this is who we are. This is who Oliverhurst is. This is the way we do it. And that way they hold true to that.
Mr. Fleury?
Yes. Rob, you were successful at Cedar Lane and at Ella. Last year, I've never, 16 years on this board, never been called by so much as I was last year. Yes, recently, I was at an intermediate game, and one of your teachers came up and gave me a hug and said, tell the board thank you. It's so different. And I knew with your energy, you'd do a great job there.
Well, as you can tell, my energy is getting less and less as the older I get. I think it's gone, but... You know what, it really is about, and all of us can attest to this, as you know, staff members and teachers, it's about all of us. And it's not about anything that, like, I want you guys to remember, whether at Cedar Lane or LA, the teachers are the ones that make the difference. The staff make the difference. When they have the buy-in and they believe it, then they'll do it. I mean, we have to take ownership, and that you're right. And so I appreciate that, and thank you. But to me, that's a reflection of those great staffs.
You do have a great staff there. They just need a great, good leader.
Thank you. I agree.
I would also just like to thank you, Mr. Greger, for keeping students first in your mind and your staff's mind, because, you know, that's really why we're here, is try to improve our kids. So thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And we do know that without them, we don't have any teachers. We don't have any money. We don't have any of that. And so reminding ourselves, without the students, you know, they pay our bills. And I appreciate the fact that are there for them. And we do have that common goal and same vision. And that's what really is neat. Because once everybody sees what it is, they go, oh, yeah, that's why I became a teacher. That's why I'm working in education. I mean, it's like a nurse. I mean, you know what your daily duties are. It's to help someone. And for us, we're helping children. I believe that. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Mr. Greger, what's one need that at Oliverhurst that would help?
I appreciate even the opportunity to say that, Mr. Stina. I believe one thing that with schools that have gone through this much transition is that I could use some support with a VP. And I know that I would love to share one with myself and our BOGA or something like that and help pay towards that. But not somebody that can help with the day-to-day and the observations, evaluations, so that we are working on the education side of things too. Because it's a lot. And so that would be, if I could have any one wish, I mean, that would be awesome, because I feel like I'm pulled in a million directions. Thank you. Any other things? That's it? Wow. One last thing. Thank you from all of us at Oliverhurst for the opportunity to share what we're doing. But most of all, thank you for the opportunity to serve our students. We all appreciate it. And I know my staff would say the same. And so if you're around this week, you know, Santa's showing up on Friday at our school. I know him personally this year. And so if you get a chance, we're doing pictures with Santa. So ho, 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 and a Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Next on the agenda, we have the annual organizational meeting of the Board of Trustees. At this point, I'm going to turn the meeting over to Mr. Cena.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Rasmussen. Annual organizational meeting of the Board of Trustees. The Board took action on the November 12, 2019 Board meeting that the annual organizational meeting will be held today, December 17, 2019 at 5:30 p.m. The law requires the Board elect a president and clerk from its members. The Board should also elect a vice president and trustee representative to the Special Education Council. The superintendent presides over the election of the president. The new president presides over the remaining elections and assumes responsibility of the meeting at that time. Here's the process for nomination of officers. Number one, there is not a second. A second is not necessary to nominate a person to stand for election. Number two, after each nomination, the board member nominated will accept or decline the nomination. A motion is not made to close the nominations. And number four, after all nominations have been made and the person nominated accepts or declines the nomination, then a motion for the first nominated candidate will take place. The first nomination that receives the majority vote in the affirmative is elected to the position, and no further votes will be taken on the remaining nominations. Before we begin with the first election of president, are there any questions? Okay. Then the floor is open for nominations for president.
I would like to nominate Randy Rasmussen. He's done a great job leading us through the selection of superintendent. He's done a great job. I'd like to nominate him.
Okay.
For another term.
Mr. Fleury has nominated Mr. Rasmussen. Mr. Rasmussen, do you accept the nomination?
Yes, I accept.
Okay. And Mr. Rasmussen's accepted. Other nominations? Okay. Nominations are closed for president. The chair will now entertain a motion for president. No, we do president. I'm sorry, we go office to office. A motion for Mr. Rasmussen as president. Okay, Mrs. Scott has made a motion for Mr. Rasmussen as president. Is there a second? Okay, thank you. Mr. Fleury has made a second. All those in favor. I don't know, do we do this by a hand vote? By hand vote, who is in favor of Mr. Rasmussen for president? It's a unanimous 7-0 vote. So, Mr. Rasmussen will now, as president of the Marysville Joint Unified School Board, will now lead us through the remaining nominations and offices.
Thank you, Mr. Cena. Our next nominations, we're opening nominations for vice president. Ms. Scott, I'm sorry, but can you make sure your microphone is on and speak to us? Thank you.
I would like to nominate Mr. Frank Crawford for the vice president position for the school year.
There's been a nomination for Mr. Frank Crawford. Mr. Crawford, do you accept or deny?
I accept.
Mr. Crawford accepts. Do we have other nominations for Vice President? Not hearing any other nominations. Is there a motion to have Mr. Crawford as the vice president. We have a motion by Mr. Allison. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Fleury. All in favor, show a raise of hands. 7 yes. Next office is the office of clerk. The nominations for clerk are now open.
I would like to nominate Ms. Susan Scott, please.
We have a nomination of Ms. Scott. Ms. Scott, do you accept or decline? Ms. Scott accepts. Are there any other nominations for clerk? If not, is there a motion? Clerk. Okay. Mr. Allison made a motion for Ms. Scott to be clerk. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Second by Mr. Fleury. All in favor, show with a raise of hands. 7 yes. I would like, just while we're going through the process or even our meetings, if we all could make sure our mics were on when we're talking and talking to the mic. Okay. Our next position is the trustee representative to the Special Education Council. Nominations are now open.
I nominate Mr. Fleury as the trustee representative to the Special Education Council.
We have a nomination for Mr. Fleury. Mr. Fleury, do you accept?
Yes.
Mr. Fleury accepts. Are there any other nominations for trustee representative to Special Education Council? If not, is there a motion?
I'd like to make a motion that Mr.
Mr. Allison makes a motion for Mr. Fleury to be the trustee representative of Special Education. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Davis. All in favor, raise your hand. 7 yes. Motion carries. Next, we have item number 2, set time, date, and place for regular meetings. Recommend the board accept the schedule of the board meeting dates as shown in special reports, except for the dates here shown.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Davis. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. 7 yes. Number 3, appoint superintendent as secretary to the Board of Trustees.
A motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Boom.
Second.
Second by Mr. Allison. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. 7 yes. Authorize superintendent and designees to sign warrants, contracts, and other documents.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Davis. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. 7 yes. Comments from the board members. I would actually like to start myself. I would just like to thank all of our board members for putting their trust in me to be able to chair this position. Thank you very much. Also, I would like to just give a shout out to our community members. It certainly is just amazing what this our community does for our students and does for our district. Community service organizations. It's just getting to hear what Mr. Greger is talking about, the Yuba Water Agency and all the partners that we have to try to help our students is just amazing. Next, Ms. Scott.
Well, I'd first like to say thank you all for coming out tonight to the board meeting. And to the people that put on the party here for the district office, it was very, very nice and very well received. I also would like to say that Bethel AME Church has donated, or in the process of donating, washer and a dryer to Linda's school as part of one of our community efforts. So, and last, I would like for you all to please rest on the school break and happy holidays.
Mr. Davis.
I would just echo what Susan just said about trying to get some rest. And the holidays can be stressful, but hopefully fun as well. And also with Mr. Rasmussen, I really feel that this community wants a successful school district and is doing everything it can to help the district meet the challenges of the new generation of helping them move forward. So we really appreciate everything that everyone does to support our district, our teachers, our staff. And happy holidays.
Mr. Allison.
Well, first off, I just want to say I'm really ticked off. But I'm really, I've been watching these things going on in Washington, and I really don't want to get political, but there's something missing in schools that I remember having when I was a kid. And that was, you know, it goes back to Thomas Jefferson and democracy being the cornerstone, or Thomas Jefferson saying that education was the cornerstone of democracy. And what we're missing is critical thinking skills. And I really wish that we could spend somehow, get away from testing. And I know we can't because our dollars are kind of based on testing. But we're missing that. And I was looking in the LA Times the other day. And we're making great testers. But there wasn't a single job in the one ads of the Times for test takers. And we're losing somehow, we're losing those critical thinking skills. And I know a lot of teachers do spend time. I know I used to. But when I see these guys in Washington, you know, bantering back and forth in a circus, and they just seem, sometimes just seem like they've lost all those thinking and skills and critical skills, and there's just something missing, and I got to tell you, I really don't know how to put it back. So thank you for letting me stand on my soapbox for a second.
Thank you, Mr. Allison. Mr. Boom.
I just want to thank everybody for coming tonight and wish you all a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and prosperous New Year. And thank you all for coming. Look forward to another 2020. Huh?
Mr. Fleury.
The district party was great to see this year. Everybody worked together, the collaboration, and I like the fact that Mr. Cena and the board members that were able to attend, we got to interact with the employees. They saw their superintendent interacting with the employees, and it was just a great atmosphere. It was a wonderful thing. Also, this morning we stuffed stockings to the Lions Club for four preschools, Ella, Cedar Lane, and Linda, and Ollie First, and South Lyndhurst came and helped us. The three students, for the record, were Isaac Bilyeu, Daniela Rodriguez, and Andrea Huerta. And the thing that was amazing was their principal came, and he was such a help. For those that know Mr. Jones, he carried stuff for us, and he modeled to the kids about community service, and they just loved their principal, and we heard that as we were doing that, and I think it was over 300 stockings we stuffed. But I want to give a shout out to Mr. Jones for the great job he did bringing kids and helped us this morning. And I just would like to all of you to have a good holiday. We have very many dedicated employees in this district, and I see them more and more as I visit the schools, and I just am proud of our employees. And have a great holiday.
Thank you, Mr. Fleury. Mr. Crawford.
I would just like to thank my colleagues for your faith in electing me your vice president. I appreciate that. I would just reiterate what two board members have said. Since I started teaching in Marys, Ohio in 1974, God, I can't believe I just said that. not giving away my age. I can't really recall how many times Kiwanis and Rotary and Lions, and I don't want to miss anybody, but the social groups, So You Can, the number of people that have helped the less fortunate than us this year as United Way, it's an all-time record, or at least it seems to me. And I just think it's tremendous that our community rallies around that. And last but not least, thank you, staff, for the Thursday feed. As many of you know, I'm a turkey junkie. And you witnessed that Thursday. And thanks for letting me take a plate home, too. Feliz Navidad to all of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Crawford. Opportunity for employee organizations to address the board. Marysville Unified Teachers Association.
So, Angela Stiegel, President, Marysville Unified Teachers Association. I would like to preface my comments this evening by stating that this afternoon, the Marysville Unified Teachers Association begrudgingly signed a tentative agreement with the district rather than put our members through a year of legal wrangling regarding the district's unfair labor practices. A wise man that I once trusted told me that 243 years ago, our founding fathers created a democratic republic founded on the principles of liberty, justice, and equality. To protect these institutions and these principles, the founders created public education. He further explained that Marysville High School was established under the principles of truth, tolerance, and liberty. I hate to say it, but there is little in the way of justice lately, and even less in the way of truth. And I can guarantee you that there is no equality in this district. This wise man, who now serves as our superintendent, recently stated that he believes he can create an impenetrable immune system shielding stakeholders from potential future non-collaborative efforts. Apparently, our current superintendent believes he can somehow control the future in ways that no other superintendent before him ever has, even the best of superintendents. Speaking of the best of superintendents, when I was hired, Peter Pillsbury was superintendent. And people I have spoken with, both in and outside of this district, agree he was a great superintendent. He respected teachers and viewed them as professionals. However, after he retired, even though that culture of respect and collaboration was imprinted on our DNA, it was soon discovered that our immune system was indeed easily penetrable. This was especially true given the fact that our school board seemed to believe that their job was to rubber stamp Liebman's actions and policies and ignore teachers' voices, concerns, and objections. The superintendent no longer served at the will of the board. The board served at the will of the superintendent and blindly approved and idly stood by as negotiations, morale, and respect for teachers plummeted. Unfortunately, this continued through Liebman's entire tenure and didn't particularly improve during Gay Todd's subsequent years at the helm. Teachers have continued to be ranked at the bottom of the barrel and treated as second-class citizens at best. Teachers have begged and pleaded for better treatment. And along those lines, we have made innumerable attempts to have a voice and to be heard. For over 15 years, we have patiently and doggedly made every effort to get our foot in the door in regards to certain issues that directly affect and impact teachers. As I stand here today, I will tell you that we are on the brink of repeating and continuing that sad, dark history because the people who are entrusted with leading this district have not learned from previous mistakes. Remember the adage, if we do not learn from our mistakes, we are doomed to repeat them. When people contacted our previous great administrators after Liebman took over, there was nothing they could do to help us. They couldn't force Liebman to listen. They no longer had any control or say in things, sadly. And that is exactly what will happen when this current superintendent is gone. In the future, when a new superintendent wants to make changes and penetrate our immune system, he or she will do so. The current superintendent is doing nothing to protect teachers from future wrongdoing, and he has the power to do so. This district and its leadership are doing absolutely nothing to convince me or this union otherwise. As a matter of fact, they are doing a great deal to convince me that this impenetrable immune system spoken of by our superintendent is all a fictional fairy tale meant to distract all of us while it's business as usual at the brick building, and while the intellectual property and ideas of union members are passed off as that of people in the DO, and while the district's ending balance and reserves continue to grow on the backs of teachers who are deemed to be not even worthy of a salary increase equal to the cost of living, despite the fact that the district receives such. The superintendent mentions trusting him. People in this district have trusted him for over 3 decades. I trusted him for well over 20 years. Now it's his turn to trust teachers. I know he did it one time, and I have faith in his ability to do so again. Our superintendent and our school board members need to look inside their hearts and their souls and find that courage and conviction and fortitude to trust teachers and treat them with the respect that they rightly deserve and continue to earn every day. If the superintendent and the school board can trust teachers the way the teachers trust them, then I believe together we can effect monumental change. Without this, Marysville Joint Unified School District will continue as the one-person show that it has been for years. No large-scale changes will be made, and negotiations will continue to be a source of frustration, degradation, and depression for teachers. Does the superintendent want to actually work with teachers, or does he merely want to impose his wishes and charges on them and force them into compliance like his recent predecessors? As for our school board, the teachers need your support. We've asked for it and been ignored numerous times. Our pleas fall on deaf ears. We need the board to respect us and to listen to us, instead of pulling the plug on us like Mr. Rasmussen and Mr. Boom recently did. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, we have the Operating Engineers, Local Union Number 3. California School Employees Association, Number 326 and 648. Association of Management and Confidential Employees. Supervisory Unit. Next we have public comments. Persons wishing to address the board are requested to fill out a public comment card before the start of the meeting and give it to the secretary, board president, or superintendent. The public may address topics not on the agenda during this section of the agenda or ask that they be heard during a specific agenda item. Comments are limited to a maximum of 3 minutes per speaker, 20 minutes total time for public input on each item per Board Bylaw 9323. The Ralph and Brown Act prevents the Board of Trustees from responding to these comments with the exception of clarifying questions. California Government Code Section 54954.2.A states no action or discussion will be undertaken on any item not appearing on the posted agenda, except that members of a legislative body or its staff may briefly respond to statements made or questions posed by persons exercising their public testimony rights under Section 54954.3. We do have 2 public comment cards. When you come to the podium, if you'd please state your name. Looks like both of the comments cards are in the same category. And we do have a clock that you'll see, and at the end of your 3 minutes, then we will turn the mic off, so please be respectful of those 3 minutes. Our first card is Linda String.
Good evening. My name is Linda String. I'm a teacher at Foothill School. You know, a lot has changed in education in the past 30-some-odd years. I think all of you agree with that. Recently, in the old-timer way, teachers were told that teaching in isolation is not the way to educate students, and collaboration is more effective. We were told that working together would allow us to become more focused in our work with students. In fact, collaboration was so important that the district office carved time out of instructional minutes to ensure that teachers could collaborate. To be honest, initially I was not a fan of collaboration. I wanted that time, the instructional time with my students. But eventually I saw the power of collaboration. Eventually, I saw that the group synergy improved my teaching and student learning. Now I stand here today confused. The district refuses to participate in the very activity that they touted as valuable. Perhaps the district's afraid of sharing power or prefer to work in isolation to hide their deficits. I assure you, collaboration is based on respect, not finger-pointing if that's the problem. After all, if collaboration helps students, doesn't it help teachers in the district office as well? So you, the board, have a very unique opportunity to create an environment in which teachers are excited to learn and excited to try new concepts and new things in the classroom with their student rather than going to a training and earning a paycheck and doing the training on our own. So I'm asking you to direct Mr. Cena to begin an era of mutual respect and openness between teachers and the district office by starting to collaborate with teachers on professional development. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next we have Mr. Brian Hatch.
Hello. I'm Brian Hatch. I'm in my 31st year in this district, currently teaching fourth grade. And I just want to begin by saying words matter, but words alone aren't good enough. Words have to be matched by action. Being on the bargaining team, I thought I was going to be done last year, and it drug on into this year. And it made me think about when I was first hired. I was first hired under Paul Britton, and he very quickly after that was replaced by Pete Pillsbury. Enjoyed a feeling of us, that there was a genuine respect for teachers and respect both ways. And then as our MUTA president has pointed out, then that radically changed. We've had an opportunity that I hope isn't completely lost, that Mr. Cena, I'll speak directly to you. You had an opportunity to really put action to words. We've heard words that teachers are respected and that what we, our input is important, but the actions haven't matched. They've been totally the opposite. This year, and most last year too, I don't think I was out any time because I was sick. It was for bargaining. And most of the bargaining sessions turned out to be stringing us along and quite frankly, a waste of time. And I would hope that you could take this opportunity. First impressions are really important, and this first impression, I'll speak for myself, has not been very good. But who cares? I'm retiring this year. I'm trying to speak for the teachers that are still going to be here and still going to work with our students. And it seems to me that teachers should know best what they need. Not to be an us and them that's been created now. Us, the district, knows better than them, the teachers, of what they need in professional development. If I can be blunt, that's a load of horse manure. Teachers should have a significant voice. That's what this whole bargaining and arguing and fighting for. Teachers asked and asked and asked for at least 15 years for a change. What's the worst that can happen if we have a co-chair? My goodness, maybe it would be better. I just ask you to consider that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hatch.
Next, we have the superintendent's report. Mr. Cena.
Thank you, Mr. Asmussen. First of all, I'd like to thank both the negotiating teams for MUTA and for the district for all their hard work and coming to an agreement that that results in teachers being compensated in the way that they deserve and also that we work toward collaboration and that as administrators that what we do as a defining element is that we share leadership and empower teachers and work together to create what's best. And that's the spirit in which we operate, and that's the spirit in which we're going to work, because that's what's best for students. I'd also like to thank Mr. Greger and the teachers that are here from Oliver's tonight. I've seen and have some idea how hard you guys have worked on your mission, your vision, your collective commitments. A lot of transition, fourth principal in 5 years, that's a lot. And appreciate what you're doing with inclusion that you shared tonight and what you're doing with the preschools and the transfers that are going on within the county and the district and in special ed. And PBIS, what you're doing to build a culture and a climate. And the Salmon Run, what you're doing with the community, the partnerships that you've developed in your demonstrated Ooky Spooky Night, as well as certainly in the Salmon Run and the field trip with the Yuba Water Agency. Together, serving every student, every day, in every way. Last week, when I attended the Yuba County Supervisors meeting, the Yuba Water Agency and the Yuba River Endowment Board were in attendance for a presentation by a firm on a Yuba County Economic Strategic Plan for Yuba County. The leader of the firm presenting was Lon Hadamia, a 1977 Marysville High School graduate from a farming family in District 10 who earned his business degree at Harvard University. The unifying county purpose is to utilize newly acquired resources from the Bullards Bar multi-million dollar agreement toward the economic, social, and civic growth of Yuba County. The unifying purpose is to transform Yuba County into a world-class economy. The positive vision was contagious in the room. The stated heart of this strategic plan, the economic catalyst, is education. Contained in the phrase, Yuba County education system provides a 21st century labor force. The key workforce skill development resources, areas that are sought in are healthcare, agriculture, construction, technology, water resources, forestry, food service, and arts and recreation. The Yuba Water Agency is already stepping forward, not only with water education activities in grades 2 through 6, like we saw tonight, and development of a world-class water education center near Parks Bar Bridge, but exploring the idea of looking to reduce school district expenses by replacing water faucets, toilets, and irrigation systems, along with providing refillable water dispensers at school sites to save Yuba County school districts hundreds of thousands of dollars, reinvest in the school, save water, provide healthy choices, and protect the environment. Focusing on education as the engine to drive this positive change, the questions community leaders are asking us are, what can we do to improve the reputation of our Yuba County schools? What things are already happening at our schools? What plans for the future do our schools already have? And what can community stakeholders do to help lift and lead schools to retain and attract students and develop the workforce, people, and citizens we need to help raise the living standard for everyone? The Yuba County supervisors would like school districts in Yuba County to speak to them on these issues and work together toward creating this new Yuba County reality. Being the largest district in the county with almost 80% of the county students, Yuba County is looking to Marysville Joint Unified for this leadership. At MJUSD, we are working toward presenting how we are serving students, how we are working to improve our efforts, and sharing ways Yuba County entities can help. It's inspiring to see people from multiple agencies unifying around one common cause. Many hands make light work. This is a saying in the FFA. Speaking of the FFA, immediately following the supervisors' meeting, I went to Marysville High School where I observed the Yuba River Endowment Board, an association of local farmers aligned with this integrated purpose of helping Yuba County grow. They donated a $15,000 check to Marysville High School FFA to help pay for FFA students' expenses associated with co-curricular FFA activities. The Yuba River Endowment is looking to help other Yuba County high schools in similar ways. This investment is already paying dividends as the Marysville High FFA chapter recently participated in the opening and closing ceremonies competition against 16 other high schools on November 13th, in which six of the seven teams entered advanced to the final round. Two of the teams placed first, another placed second, two placed third, and one placed fourth. Out of these teams, there were eight individual competitors who won high honors. This means out of 300 competitors, these eight students were the best in their office compared with other students. Donations and activities like these accelerate students' leadership skills, speaking skills, and knowledge of the agricultural industry, which all feeds into the collective vision for all of Yuba County in which we are all part of, receivers of, and contributors toward. Coming out of the winter break and entering 2020, we look forward to joining this collective effort at a new level, together, serving every student, every day, in every way. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cena. Next, we have the approval of the minutes. Minutes from the regular board meeting on November 12th, 2019. If there's no additions or deletions, we'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Fleury. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. 7 yes. Next we have the consent agenda. Are there any items on the consent agenda that board members would like to have pulled? If not, is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Boom. Any discussion? All in favor say aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. 7 yes. Looks like we're moving to page 13, new business. Purchasing Department, Resolution 2019-20/17. Sports equipment. Looks like Mr. Horn, give us a little information on that.
Odd piggyback that we could use, and kind of an idea of what a sports equipment is. It's things like backboards, scoreboards, backstops, fitness equipment. Big thing around the district is the shade structures. This would just give the maintenance department, the district, an additional tool to be able to procure these items that we do need. And we do have an aggressive kind of timeline for this summer's projects, and this will also help for that as well. And this these piggybacks, just to reiterate, it does save us money for using them. These are already going out and competitively bidded, and kind of an idea. It's about $7,500 for the district in soft costs every time that we go out for a bid. So it does save us money on every time we use these tools.
Fantastic. Any questions? Thank you very much for that explanation, Mr. Horn. If there's not, is there a motion? I have a motion to approve by Mr. Davis. Is there a second? Second by Ms. Scott. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 7 yes. Thank you. Next we have Buildings and Grounds Department. Additional services with JK Architect Engineering Incorporated for modular classroom building at MCAA, project number 8197. Mr. Barnett.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the board. This additional service for MCAA in the original contract amount, it did not include the removal of the current storage building. Current storage building is actually a portable classroom. So in order to get that relocated, additional services will be needed for path of travel, electrical, and everything that goes along with it. But that will also include with JK's proposal to relocate that building on the same site at MCAA, but it's additional services needed through the architect so we can submit it to DSA to get approval and close out on that project when completed.
Any questions? Thank you, Mr. Barnett. If not, is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Fleury. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 7 yes. Buildings and Grounds Department number 2, change order number 2 with American River Construction Incorporated for the MHS Ag Mechanics Modernization, project number 8159. Mr. Barnett.
Yes, so you'll see there's a lot of items under this change order number 2. However, the biggest one that stands out that you'll see is for an 800-amp breaker, which was in the range of $50,000 plus. The reason for this change order was due to the mechanical infrastructure of this project. It was included in the original scope, the 800-amp breaker. However, when we went to go install it with the architects, we soon found out that the technology has changed. We can no longer retrofit an 800-amp breaker in the current panel. With that being said, additional work was needed to add the panel in that location to be able to accommodate that 800-amp panel. Currently, the building is functioning without it. However, it is a kind of a fail-safe backup system. So in the event that something trips the breaker in the ag mechanics right now, the entire wing would go down for power. So it is crucial that we went ahead and installed this 800-amp breaker in the event that something were to trip in the ag mechanics classroom, that breaker catches it and it doesn't knock out half the school. So it was definitely necessary to complete this project, but the unforeseen circumstances of the technology being outdated and the manufacturer no longer making a retrofit for that breaker is the reason for that added expense. If you have any other questions with any of the other items, I'd be more than happy to go through those with you as well. But I know that the larger item on that change order would be that 800-amp breaker.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Barnett?
Yeah, yes, sir. I'm just curious why American River Construction wasn't in their contract. They didn't catch the electrical. You would think that would be just jump at you.
Right. So when it's not really American River Construction, it would be our architect firm who went through and did the initial electrical infrastructure civil work on it to make sure everything was compatible. During that time in design, we hate to use the word making assumptions, but typically when we go through with that, they look at the panels, they say, we're going to have to do an 800-amp upgrade breaker. And in the industry, usually it's something we would just say, yeah, that's industry standard. This should be no big deal. As we know, technology gets outdated. During the time of design, there could have been 5 on the shelf in the entire United States. And once we go to install it, we find out, hey, you know, Square D or whoever it is, its manufacturer no longer makes them. And that's where we run into the problem. And when we're in design phases, we don't know what manufacturers stop making retrofit kits. So it just so happened as we rolled through this process, they don't go through and kind of spec out things and see what's on the shelf. It's kind of a, we make the assumption that those parts are available and the retrofit kits are there. So it's kind of one of those unforeseens in that realm. But it really doesn't fall on the American River Construction. It would fall on our design team. And I wouldn't really call it an oversight. It is an unforeseen condition based on the fact that nobody knows if those parts were really not manufactured anymore, because it's something recent. It's not something that everybody knows of. It's one of those, hey, now when we move forward in other projects, we kind of know, like, there's no more retrofits kits for panels that were made in 1945 or 1950.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. That's a good answer. Thank you very much.
Will this last change order finish this project?
I believe right now, currently, we might have one more coming in. Working with Doug Trower in the maintenance department, there is one change order that we're hoping to see a reduction in that cost of that 800-amp breaker. There was an old irrigation pump that was a huge diesel tractor engine that was in there. And some of the square footage for the conduit for this 800-amp breaker, the reason why the cost is so expensive is it's something close to $300 a foot to run. There's four lines that need to be ran. Doug has had the maintenance department remove this old pump, which has saved us approximately 15 feet, four conduits. So the savings are in there. So hopefully the change order we see will be that of a credit back to this original cost. Being that we are working through this, we won't see it until they can actually get in there and see how they're going to run it. But the anticipation of this closeout after this last initial change order, we don't foresee anymore. However, being that the project is not closed out yet, I can't say that there's not going to be any more, but I do not anticipate any.
Any other questions or discussion?
Yeah, what architect was the one that designed that one?
Rainforth Ground, RGA.
Okay. Yeah, just kind of dumbfounded that when you're going to do a ag mechanics modernization and you're talking about using a lot of electricity, would that not be the first thing you would check? I mean, it just makes sense to me. So anyways, I was just wondering who was responsible for the oversight. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Any other discussion? If not, is there a motion? Motion approved by Mr. Davis. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Fleury. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries, 7 yes. Thank you, Mr. Barnett.
You're welcome.
Next we have business services. The correction to amount approved for project authorization number 1 with PBK Architects for the K-8 addition project at our Bogue Elementary School. Mrs. Lossing?
Okay, thank you. This is simply when the original contract was approved, the wrong amount was on the agenda item, and the actual contract amount is this new amount, $778,550 for approval. So it was simply an oversight on the original amount approved. There's no increase in cost for any reason. It was just the actual amount was not correct on the agenda item. So we'd ask that you approve the actual original correct amount.
So at that point we had a clerical error or something of that nature?
Yes.
Okay. Any other questions or concerns? If not, is there a motion?
Motion approved.
Motion approved by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second? Second by Ms. Scott. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries, 7 yes. Number 2, PBK Architects presentation regarding our Boga School TK8 expansion. Ms. Lossing?
Yes, as you'll recall, at our November board meeting, we had a presentation by PBK Architects regarding our Boga TK8 expansion, and there were several questions raised and additional information that the board had asked to see. So this is another presentation answering those questions and expanding on the progress toward this project. So we have PBK Architects here to present.
Thank you.
This is Gary.
Welcome,
Geary.
Mr. Geary. Russell, would you mind and maybe dim the light up here when? Thank you.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the board, Superintendent Cena, guests. Happy to be back here. Was here last month. giving you some information related more to what we were developing from a design perspective on the conversion of our and expansion of our Boga Elementary to a from a K-6 to a TK-8. So you had some very good questions and requested some additional information. In lieu of just sending back, you know, emails with some of the information, we felt the best approach would be to come back and put an in-depth presentation together that kind of walked through the entire process, answer some of the questions, and you can see kind of what the process was to where we got to the design that we've got and presented previously. So when we started with this project, one of the things that we looked at was there was some available money that the district had. There's a lot of needs within the district. So we went out and looked at a number of options of how money could be spent on site. So we looked at and walked our Boga, Kuvalad, Linda, Foothill, and Marysville High School, looking at various needs at all of those sites. What we were looking at was trying to see what money was available from state eligibility together with what district money would be made available. But what we were coming up with is trying to do projects at multiple sites. The projects were small. They were in the $1 million to $3 million range. The problem with projects like that is small projects often don't have the amount of impact on a site that, you know, we may really be wanting to have. The other option, the other problem that develops is when you're doing smaller multiple projects, you have more risk of costs going up as economic conditions change through time with inflation, and then having to do further scope reduction, making the projects even less of an impact. So we had multiple discussions within the district about the facility needs. And in looking at the sites, we came to the conclusion that our Boga needed a lot of attention for a lot of reasons. And so we concentrated on what could be done at our Boga. So that is why the project went in that direction. So we'll kind of go over the site again. So we presented last time, but just to kind of show you again what it looks like, there's the small parking lot off of Broadway in the front. That's that gray little area. A number of portable classrooms in the blue and the purple, and then the grass areas, the playground areas. The white shows where we actually have kind of gravel for bus drop-offs and some of the parking, and that's somewhat problematic from an ADA perspective and having buses dropping off students in gravel because it's not at all accessible. And we've only got 15 parking spaces in the front, 14 over by the preschool, so cars are parked all over the place. The site itself is just about 12 acres. Typical K-6 is about 10 acres for a K-8 school, which is what we're looking to make this into. Usually run in the 12 to 14 acre range, so we're kind of right about there from a site size perspective. Currently, there's only almost 29,000 square foot of existing buildings. That includes permanent and portables on the site. So there's a lot of space available to work within. So some additional information about the school. So currently, there are 21 classrooms. It's actually 20 plus kind of a flex classroom, and then the two flex are really used as art and library. The current capacity based on the classrooms as they're being used is about 550 students. The enrollment is 478. The capacity is based on the district's loading criteria of 24 up through third grade and then 33 from fourth grade on. Not all classrooms are loaded at full capacity at the moment. So we have an excess capacity currently on site of 74. 29 parking spaces in total, and there's 54 staff that are regularly on site. So you can see the parking is a major problem at this site. So the concerns that we came up with after doing the analysis, talking with the site, is that, first of all, there is increased enrollments. Looking at the demographic studies, talking to the county, the bulk of the growth is in the Yuba Gardens attendance area from an intermediate school perspective, and from an elementary, most of it is in Arboga. Looking at the approved developments and what was indicated on the demographic study. So that is a concern. Second concern is the traffic flow, with the basically a dead-end street and all the cars coming and going off that. The lack of on-site parking. The age of the initial building, as well as portables that are going to start aging out. There is an excess number of portables, 22 of them, and a restroom building. There is not a lot of support space. Again, this school started much smaller, the portables getting added over the years. So when you look at the square footage of a 2,200 square foot multipurpose space for a school of almost 500 is very inadequate by current CDE standards. So the support space is about 50% of a typical school of this size. There's a lack of restroom facilities for this many students, as well as inadequate layouts, ADA considerations for them as well. The layout of the campus is somewhat inefficient. It's very spread out. You've got a play field that's in the middle of all of the classrooms, so noise is a problem. If one group is out for recess and the others are in class, they're right outside the front door. So that was a major complaint at the site. There's some grading and drainage problems throughout the site as well. And then overall, the fields, the courts, playgrounds need some upgrading. There's ADA issues even getting out to them as well. So we looked at the enrollments, as I said, off the demographics. Current enrollment at Arboga, 478, projected to go to 530 for 2021. And by 2425, it's up to 599, which starts exceeding its capacity. We looked at, is the site losing students, gaining students? We've got six coming in from other districts. We actually have 162 students coming into the school from other schools, and there's 311 that live in the current attendance area, and 92 are moving out of the district attendance to another school. So that's about a net of 70. We also looked at Yuba Gardens. Current enrollment is 825. It's got a slight dip, but then we'll be up to 900, which is pushing right at its capacity. To note there's 771 in the attendance area that are attending the school, so it's a very high number. But there are also 196 that are going out of the attendance area to attend other schools. So those could be captured. If those got captured back, then we would have a problem with the size of the school for capacity. So if we look strictly at the enrollment increases of 121 for 24-25, 72 at Yuba Gardens for 24-25, that's about 193 students. We used 25, which is not quite the average between the 24 and the 33, but just for round numbers, eight classrooms give you in the range of about 200 more students that could be added. So that just kind of gives us a little bit background then on attendance, numbers, capacity. So So one of the issues of major concern is traffic. So typical traffic study that we looked at on site, you can see some of the numbers. Street parking, 93 cars are parked on the street for morning drop-off, 75 for afternoon pickup. You've got 130 cars going through that small parking lot for drop-off and pickup of 105 in the afternoon. The buses are using that gravel loop. There's four buses. And then there's between 10 and 20 people parked over at the community center parking lot. So a lot of cars on the street. So a lot of congestion. So that kind of shows the even more the issue of dealing with traffic flow and parking. We talked to the county. Are there any improvements in mind for roads and street systems out there? There's no current plans to do any upgrades with Broadway. It is going to be the way it is. It, of course, is unimproved. You get a lot of grading and drainage problems, water buildup, not good during the rainy days to have kids traipsing through in the puddles to get to and from cars. Now, Arboga Avenue, about 10 years ago, plans were put out there to widen and extend the road along the west side of the site, kind of going across that ditch. But because development then came to a screeching halt back in the Great Recession, nothing further has come of that. The county is not aware that it is currently being discussed to come back, but who knows? It was a thought back then. With more development, it could become a thought in the future. So in looking at some of those traffic flow considerations, if that road, for instance, ever got built, that could give us a alternative to come in and out of the site, either for cars or for buses. You can see the light blue coming in there for a possible bus loop. The community center, which is owned by the Arboga Community Center, is the listed owner of it. There is the possibility of easements that could come through that site to help with the traffic flow onto the site, again, because we have such a minimal street frontage. And then we look at how the drop-off, trying to expand it, widen it from its current state so that we can get more cars lined up for drop-off. Again, noting we have about 12 foot of parking driveway that is currently built on the owner's adjacent parcel. If they ever want to try and take back, we need to account for that issue as well. And then we have the preschool parking, which could also be expanded. We have an electrical service that is kind of in the middle of a lot of this traffic flow, which we don't really want to move due to the cost, so we'll just have to continue to work around that. So this was the concept for phase one that we brought to you last month, just to, again, kind of reiterate the design, expanding the parking lots and the drop-offs, with the blue being the bus, the red being the cars for drop-offs through the parking lot. We've got the multipurpose building and then the sixth through eighth grades in the two orange classroom wings, including a science room and restrooms. The rest of the site, there's some slight reconfigurations and moving of classrooms around, moving some admin space, moving the resource space into existing portables, and then moving the library up into the multipurpose space since a new multipurpose building would get built as part of this development. It shows a full-size soccer field and track, which there were some questions about, and we'll get to that in a minute. This is kind of gives you maybe a little bit better way to look at it, kind of a bird's eye view, plopping the new development over the existing site, which we show while each of the portable classrooms would be designated for use, where the multipurpose goes, the classroom wings, and the track and soccer fields, as well as the hard court and the parking. So with phase one, looking at, you know, basic capacities, the number of classrooms would be at 31. We've got science and art that we don't load because they get students in and out of those during the course of the day. One flex classroom being provided for the lower grades, so it gets us up to a capacity of 807, which then can relieve the growth pressures from both Yuba Gardens for the 6th, 7th, and 8th, and Arboga for the lower grades. One of the other things proposed is adding a TK. Currently, there's not a TK at Arboga, so there's a preschool there, but then they have to go to another site for TK, and then they come back for kindergarten. So it would be beneficial to add the TK so they can stay on that site and not have to be relocated. We show about 21,000 square feet of additional buildings would be constructed, and we would increase the parking up to 101 spaces. So that would now easily take care of staff, which of course would grow from the number indicated and still leave some for visitor and then for evening and off hour, you know, events. We would have, be taking a lot of cars off of the street. We looked at the traffic, the parking, the drop-off layouts. One side kind of shows what we're proposing on the left screen, where the buses are in the lower loop, trying to fit six of those in, which would fit nicely. And then the cars would kind of drop off on the inner loop, about 23 of those. Then we looked at bringing the cars on the lower loop and the buses on the inner, and the problem is we can only fit like two buses. So that's why we have gone with the option on the left currently. So the track, there were some questions about that, and we had talked to the site and worked with the site, and they did not want a traditional, you know, your quarter mile track with, you know, five lanes. They just wanted a track to jog on, walk on, an informal type of track. So there's a couple pictures of kind of what they were looking to have. That happens to be Carmel River Elementary School. Goes around the field. It's like 9-10 feet wide just for students to walk on or do a little jogging. So that was really the concept. So we show a couple of different layouts. The layout one is currently closer to what we had proposed on the original plan. We also looked at a second layout, putting it off to the west side of the site. That walking track is longer. It's actually closer to half a mile instead of a quarter of a mile. But that was the intent, not to have just more of an informal walking jogging path. There were some questions about how could construction be done on an existing site with phasing. So we've looked at how phasing would work, looking at this project starting construction summer 2021. The parking lot area in the blue would be a first phase. We would then go into a second phase, which would be the main buildings kind of in the center of campus, which we'd now have good access to with the parking all being completed. And then the third phase, the summer of 2022, would be completing fields, track, and the playgrounds. We looked at costs, I believe, last time, but just to kind of summarize, we were looking at currently hard construction costs, a little over $12 million. With the soft costs, it's about a $15 million project. Comparing that to a new 7th, 8th, or 6th, 7th, and 8th of 750 students, that's about a $40 million school, plus the cost to buy the property. So it definitely gets you a lot more bang for your buck. And then we've kind of listed funding availabilities. So currently the state modernization eligibility for the site is somewhere between 2.3 and 3.3 million. We still need to get the new eligibility numbers run to see what that might yield. There would also be some additional money for site grant as part of this process, depending on the extent of it. So there could very well be several hundred thousand dollars available for that. You've got $3.4 million in developer fees and a little over $12 million left at last count. It's probably going to be reduced after summer projects from Measure P. So you can see the costs and the funding. Project schedule, we would be hoping to restart the project from the point we stopped to finish schematic design, design developments, construction documents in February, getting the DSA by August approval next January for a March bid so that we could do phase one in the summer 2021 and then launch into the phase two and then do the phase three fields finishing up by summer of 2022. So that would coincide with classes starting with a brand new campus in 2022. We had included the future plans just to show you, again, to familiarize yourself. We had a couple of options, eliminating the bulk of the portable buildings, creating a couple of different layouts. You can see with them the blue buildings, the purple being the TK and the K in more of a radial arrangement, and then one in more of a linear fashion, creating more north-south orientations and a big amphitheater quad space in the future. Either one of those could happen after phase one is built. The future development has it up to 906 for capacity, 51,000 square feet of buildings, in total 116 parking spaces. So well, the last thing that we've had discussions about as this project gets kicked back off and continues along is at some point we would go into construction, what would be the best delivery methods, and I could talk all night on alternative delivery methods. So if you go to the CASH conference in February, I've got a workshop on alternate delivery methods. We think for this project, lease-leaseback is probably the best approach. We can get a contractor on board early while we're doing design, which helps us with pricing and constructability. And the selection is based on a combination of their qualifications and their pricing. They can then provide what we call pre-construction services. This creates more of that team approach where we can develop a guaranteed maximum price so we can avoid change orders on the project. We then would go, the contractor would go through a process of selecting subs through bidding and making selections based on bidding or best value. So we'll get, generally get you, you get better subs. Lease-leaseback is subjected to what we call the skilled and trained workforce, which is currently at a quota of 50% in 2019. In 2020, it's 60%. We don't know if that'll hold in 2021 or not. There have been, these numbers have been kind of been put on hold because it's been difficult to reach these quotas. The way a lease-leaseback works is you do lease payments to the contractor. Basically, it can be a set amount per month, or it can be based on the value of construction progress. Either method is used, but it has to have a post-construction financing component, which are, quote, lease payments that run anywhere from 6 to 12 months, which basically takes your costs that you have to pay out, and it spreads it out a little bit longer before you actually finally pay all the costs of the project. So with that, if you have any questions, where we're at on this is, you know, we wanted to provide some additional information based on the last meeting, and then find out then, you know, next steps is if this project wants to continue back into schematic design and continue on its road. You know, that's why we showed February to give some time to have some thought on this.
So, Mr. Gary, I would just like to say thank you again for coming back again and making the presentation.
Sure.
I apologize you had to wait
so long in our agenda to be able to do that for you and your team to be here.
It's okay.
Maybe I missed it when you were talking. I did see that we were adding one more set of restrooms. Is that correct? To our current, it looked like it was out on the far.
Actually, there would be two. There's would be one in one of the classrooms, and there would be restrooms in the multipurpose building.
I thought I saw along that wing there on the bottom on the right-hand side is where the other set of restrooms are.
Yeah, the center, that center wing would have a set of restrooms, and then there's also a set of restrooms would be in the multipurpose. So that would help us to get adequate number of restrooms for the site.
Any other comments or questions?
I hate to be a nitpicker, but I'm going to be because I brought it up last time, and I sure adheres to what I did in the past. You had mentioned once again that the soccer field and football field, the traditional style, is going to have a walking, and this was instead of a traditional 9-10 lane track. My only concern was when I coached in high school, and as three sports, we called them feeder schools, our middle schools. And they would get the basic skills in track or wrestling or cross country, sports I coached for many years. I have a granddaughter who travels to Wheatland. She's 12 years old, competes in track, competes in cross country, Rockland, Roseville. I've never been to a middle school that has a traditional soccer field that only has a little walk around. What kind of cost are we talking about to make it a traditional track and field? I mean, you know, like they do in the Olympics and stuff. I would hate to go out there and just see a little walking lane. Who's recommending that?
Well, that was in discussion. A couple things. In talking to the site, they felt like that is really all they're looking for. And because it's a K-8, it's a little bit different than just a straight intermediate or middle school, because that population is, you know, quite a bit smaller at a K-8 school. So they saw this as more advantageous for the lower grades, for one, which is a larger population. And then, you know, again, it can still be used for the smaller middle school population. So that's
so
really
sixth,
kind
seventh,
of what
and
drove
eighth
it.
Graders are still 6th, 7th, and 8th graders.
Correct.
They're still going to go on to high school. They're not going to have any of the skills that I just forementioned. And like I said, I hate to nitpick, but once again, what would be the difference in cost? I don't want to know who's recommending a little walk around. I'm sure it's somebody sedentary that has never did a track or field.
Depending on the size of this track, if it's, you know, 9 lanes, which is unusual for a middle school, but even if it's more of a standard 5 or 6, I mean, we're probably looking at $600,000-$700,000 more to do a standard conventional track.
You know, Frank, I'd like to point out that at Foothill and McKinney didn't even have tracks. But what I'd be most concerned about is making sure that the lower grades and the upper grades have separate bathrooms in there, you know, far apart. I mean, I've, you know, been in situations where I've had parents, you know, complain, you know, when you start mixing kids together, you know, the low grades and the upper grades, because, you know, they're very concerned about the older grades on the buses and the older grades.
I concur with you there.
And there's some issues there that I think we really need to make sure straightened out.
Yeah, and that would occur. We would have a set of restrooms for the upper grades. There are actually two sets of restrooms currently for the lower grades, and then the multipurpose, which will be used by a multitude of people from public to the lower grades when they're in there for lunch, and then the upper grades when they're in there for lunch, as well as they're easily accessible from the fields and whatnot as well.
I didn't want you to misunderstand me. I agree with you. The restrooms are far more higher up on the food chain. I just, if we're going to invest all this money, I just don't want to look at a second-rate facility. That's the only reason. I wouldn't want to go out there and say, wow, what is this? A little walk around.
And I understand. And again, at this point of where we are in the design, you know, we certainly can, you know, visit that if that's the direction ultimately we decide we want to go.
Yeah. I could be this could just be my pet peeve. So believe me.
That's okay. I just had
thank
a
thank you. thank you.
Yeah, I had a district call me this week, and they've got 4 junior highs. None of them have tracks, and they said, can you do an overlay of a standard 9-lane quarter-mile track on each field?
Well, maybe the ones in Rockland and Wheatland and Roseville, are, especially Rockland, they have more money.
So I get it.
They're more fluent, I agree. But once again, from invitationals to everything else, 6th, 7th, and 8th graders would like to do that are going to go on to high school, maybe be our future gymnast or track and field or 400-meter champion. They're going to walk around a little dirt road, huh? Unacceptable to me, but I will shut up.
Mr. Gary, I would just like to say, page 15 where you kind of did the overlay of on the new proposal versus or on top of the current site is certainly helpful for me. So I truly appreciate that. And maybe it seemed like my questions next are, you know, what are next steps? Not that one yet. My assumption is we have met. I know you've met with the site principal and hopefully our director of transportation and our director in nutrition to make sure that what we're looking at here, because those are our experts in those fields for our sites, getting their input, I think, would be invaluable to make sure the path of travel of cars and parking and those things.
So actually, both of those would be integral in the next steps, sitting down with your director of nutrition services. We've allocated currently some space. We've not at all designed it, so we would want to sit down and get the specific requirements and work on the design, and we would bring in our food service design consultant to sit and work with her on that, and additional discussions with transportation on the buses and the routing of the buses to make sure, you know, because we have obviously would have a lot more detail that will go into this with all the departments, further discussions with the site community until we develop a final design through the schematic and design development phases.
Will the county be realistically, Yuba County, redoing the highway out there, or was that just speculation? You don't know.
That was proposed apparently by the developers about 10 years ago with all the development that they wanted to do that, and they had submitted some plans that we got a hold of to the county, but the county has no money and would spend no money on that project. So if it's going to happen, it's going to happen from developers who want to do it.
Understood. Thank you.
Mr. Gary, could you go to maybe slide 15? I'm sorry, 17. I guess 17. You're already on 15. I'm sorry. So these look like the two proposals that we have for maybe where the buses and car drop-offs would be. Maybe Mrs. Vetti could kind of give us some help on the one on the left. It seems like we have a little area. It looks like there's probably 7 or 8 cars for car drop-offs there on the site, and then we have a total of 23 cars. It says that can come in there. I guess my concern would be, do we think parents are going to start dropping off before they get way up there to where the 7 or 8 cars are going to want to, where we want to drop kids off? Are we going to have that all fenced off? And or maybe that's still discussion to come.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely something we need to look and talk about. The reality is, you know, drop-offs at sites take on their own unique
character, a lot of which depends on the person dropping them off and where they stop and how it backs up traffic. So realistically, I think there is about 8 cars that are right there in the very front of the campus that would be the likely spot where they would be dropped. I would assume most parents would do it that way. They would have the additional 15 would kind of stack up behind them to come in. Whether they, out of desperation, say, okay, you know, you're late, get out. Like the Honda commercial where they drive up and they open the door and they kick it out. I don't know. But yeah, we would definitely want to have some discussions with transportation further, especially because we've got the bus component that integrates with this.
I guess another thought that I had was for safety. I'm thinking like Edgewater. Edgewater, we have fencing that goes all the way around it, and I think we have one entrance where kids come in to get onto the site. Currently, our Boga, we certainly have some fences out front, but they're in the bus area, you know, it's all open. Have we thought of that from a district standpoint? Are we for security and safety?
I think that is a discussion. We've had some of those discussions about site fencing. There would also be additional discussions about fencing related to the cars and the buses. But yeah, that has been an initial discussions we've had. We've not gotten into the detail of how all that would work yet.
Okay. Thank you. Any other? So maybe this is for Penny. What are next steps? Do we bring this presentation to the public, or do we talk about it here, or that's still down the road?
Well, according to Mr. Gary, they would like to get started in February. So we would need like a formal board approval of the project and the funding for the project at the January board meeting. And then if we were to do additional community meetings, maybe have them before that January 28th board meeting for further input.
Okay.
Yes, so I think we take the questions that are generated tonight, just like this presentation was generated from the questions from the November presentation, and then consult with directors of nutrition and transportation and get those questions worked out and get their opinions on what how we should design and what we should feature, and then have a parent we'll meet with our BOGA and schedule a time to meet with the community so they can see the project at that point and then be able to bring that to the board at the end of January so that we can meet this project schedule.
Right, and have an action item for the formal approval to commit the funds.
Okay, any other questions? So this was actually just an informational item.
Correct.
So there's no action needed on it. And again, Mr. Gary and your team, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Happy to come anytime.
Well, be careful with that.
I'll call you tomorrow.
Okay, number 3, we have public safety power shutoff preparedness plans. Again, this will be an informational item. Mrs. Lossing?
Yes, we have a presentation for you. I know that we've all become all too familiar with the public safety power shutoffs that have occurred in our district and for our Foothill schools and all the lost days. I realized when I started that there's been an awful lot of work done toward preparing for future public safety power shutoffs, as well as what's what we've already done to mitigate the concerns around those. So I worked with a lot of members of the district team And we put together this presentation that, as you'll see, will involve a lot of our experts in their fields. And we'll go ahead and get started. So we're going to review what's happened this year around those events. We'll hear about the educational services and academic planning that's occurred and is ongoing. And then we're going to hear from each of these business services areas, our technology and communications, nutrition services, transportation, purchasing, facilities, and fiscal. And then we'll look at next steps as well.
So this first slide is a public safety shutdown review. You can see on the left the schools that were affected, six schools. You see at 9:24 and 9:25 that you see that all schools were closed except Cordova. But then you look at October 9, October 10, all six schools were closed. But after that, starting in October 11th, Cordova has not been on the shutoff list. So kind of we're trying to look at it here strategically as to, based on data, what's the pattern that's developing. So at the far left, the little square at the bottom, we were able to hold school at Yuba Feather, because you notice Yuba Feather at the bottom was closed the first 4 days. That's because we're committed to opening schools when it's safe and it's the right thing to do. So those first 4 days, the 10-year-old generator, we didn't know if it would run full day and service students. When we were confident it would, we started on 10-11, and that's the plan. So from now on, public shutdown, Yuba Feather will be open with a generator. The second little box to the right, Cordova seems to be off the PSPS grid as of October 11th. So we're looking to that. Then you look over to the far right at the top, Browns Valley Elementary was closed every day except on November 20th. Now, they never actually shut down the power on November 20th, but Browns Valley was never on the schedule. So we're hopeful that Browns Valley may be in the future, may not be. We did notice that Browns Valley was always the first school to get power back, and part of it is walking the lines that it's just positioned in a place where we're hoping they may not have to. So what you see there is out of six schools originally, we're looking at three, Dobbins, Foothill, and Loma Rica, which are all sort of the focal point, because we figure we got 230 days before the next shutdown window starts, and we want to be prepared to keep schools open when there's a shutdown, but we want it to be safe, and we want students to be able to learn.
Thank you. And so some of our preparation planning results, of course, we feel the safest place for students is at school with these power shutoffs, and that we want schools to remain open as much as possible, so we're preparing for the next outages. We identified that for the 2021 school calendar, we'll need to build in additional makeup school days just in case the state is not so lenient as far as granting waivers. We had heard rumors that they were going to require schools to be prepared for these. I don't know if they realized how difficult that is. So we'll handle that with our school calendar for next year. And then also realizing as we make these plans that there are so many possible scenarios, and it's impossible to plan for all of them, but we're going to plan for as many of them as we can. And with that, we have Mr. Greco to talk about the academic planning portion.
Good evening, everybody. So just real briefly, some of the feedback that we got from stakeholders in talking to the groups after the shutdowns, you kind of had two camps when it looked at academic planning. There was people who wanted the schools open immediately, wanted to send their kids there. You also had the group of families who were looking at it more as, well, the power shut down, we don't have showers at the house, we don't have X, Y, and Z, we really don't want to send the kids to. So when you look at it from an academic planning perspective, one of the biggest comments we heard was, well, can we just give packets? Can we just send the work home? And that poses several problems as we start planning. Obviously, we know if we can get students in front of our teachers, that's the best scenario. That's how it's going to work. So what I drafted up here just for you to look at briefly was the idea of academic planning and going to packets or kind of addressing that idea. And what you have is kind of a jigsaw of the standards that they may be doing in the different subjects that they're teaching. And so up on the top, you'll see the shutdown. Let's just call that the first day of shutdown and where they were at. So if you were to shut that day out, the assumption to a packet is that the teacher is going to skip over everything that would have occurred on that day and continue moving on, and there's going to be a gap in the education. When in reality, it's jigsawed so well together by the teachers that you're not skipping that material. They're essentially going on pause for that period of time and starting up where they left off. So if you were to try to address that with some out-of-school solution, what you're going to have is some kids who are going to possibly be able to do that on their own and be able to remain up with the class. You're going to have some students, because of the home situation, maybe the power being off, that they're not able to keep up. And so when the students come back, then they're going to be at a different place, and it's going to make the differentiation of instruction even more difficult. So the idea of packets becomes difficult. I think that in the planning where we're at right now, looking at some of the best solutions or trying to find ways to build days into the calendar. So any holiday days, you look at snow days at the end of the year or things of such. If you're able to build those days earlier into the year, then we can recuperate those days of instruction before you get to the end. So there's two kind of ways that I think people would look at that. First from, you know, are they going to get everything they need? And some would look at that from a testing perspective, and we would say, well, we open the testing window 66% of the way into the year. So there's a large gap in time to be able to make that up. But obviously the whole 180 days that we have with students is crucial and important. So what can we do in order to get that caught up? And I think that not just for the students that was shutting down and fire, for all of our students, more instruction, the more things that we're able to do to be able to help them to be able to fill gaps or move on is important. So we're looking at different ways that we can look at possibly tutoring or bringing in students who are struggling, not just because of the shutdowns, but addressing it from a more global perspective at those sites and the other sites as well. But currently, we think that there's some things that we could do as a district in planning to help students, making resources available online to supplement some of the things they've already done to reinforce learning or provide activities that aren't going to move the entire class forward and leave certain students behind in that process. So that's about where we are at in the academic planning portion thus far. Thank you.
Technology.
I am jealous of your height. So, real quick. So all of our sites have at least one analog phone line. The key to that is we've gone to a voice over IP system. All of our phones are tied into our network. If I lose our routers, if we lose connection to the district office, all of a sudden the phones become an issue. They don't work the way they're designed. We still have one analog phone for all of us that, well, actually, at the moment, everyone here will remember the old analog phone that doesn't have to be plugged into power. You can either do the rotary or you can just push the buttons and it will work. We have one school in particular right now that we've called it the bat phone for many years. It's Yuba Feather, just because of where they're at. They actually have a red phone designed just for this. Most of the other schools, it's their fax line that we can tie into. We are going to add the quote-unquote bat phone to all the schools just for this, and not just the ones that are going to be affected by the power shutdowns or potentially affected by the power shutdowns, but all schools. If we lose power anywhere for any reason, we want to make sure that it's very easy for them. They do have the ability now to communicate, but we want to make it very easy and recognizable for them and just how they're going to do that. You'll also see that we're looking at battery backup for at least 60 minutes of continuous power for voice data, Wi-Fi, intercom systems. That actually started before this latest round of power shutdowns. We recently upgraded the intercom system in Marysville High School, and all their speakers now are IP speakers, which also, again, ties into the network. And we started realizing that if that's the case, we need to make sure that if there ever is a power shutdown for any reason, we need to make sure that we keep all those speakers up and running so that the school has the ability to communicate over intercom systems and things like that. So we started looking at this about a year ago, getting prepared for it. One of the things will be, depending on where we're at, we've got some cabinets that have not just, say, a router or a switch, but they also have a server for security cameras, or they may have any number of different items. So in order to make sure that the whole cabinet, everything, has up to 60 minutes. It may require some power. We're looking at, you know, do we need 120 volt? Do we need 240 volt? We're actually going through that right now and identifying all those locations. And then with Travis's help, we'll be able to start preparing that. 60 minutes, to be completely honest, on a power shutdown doesn't help us a whole lot because we're being shut down for hours at a time. In order to keep a school up for hours at a time on a battery backup instead of a generator, the battery would be as big as this table. So, but we still want to make sure that even if we do shut down going into generator, when we can get to that point, that we have uninterrupted power during that time, or if there's a power shutdown for any other reason, that we make sure that we can keep the communications and everything going for at least an hour. The other thing on that is the battery backups will have built-in notification features. That just makes it easier for us because if something shuts down at, say, 2 a.m. at Dobbins, how do we know? The systems that we're looking at will actually have notifications built in. Since they're battery backups and we can keep all the technology equipment up and running, we'll be able to get those email notifications. We can define or designate who those go to. We'll be able to get those notifications even when there's nobody on site so that we know what we're kind of walking into the next day. That also goes on the other side. When power comes back up, we don't always know when PG&E is going to throw things back up, but once we start getting the notifications back that we're seeing power, that's what that's going to help us with as well. Okay, moving on to communications. I have to start here by saying thank you to Mr. Cena. He has been so diligent about the communications and making sure that the information that's going out to our parents and our staff and our students even is just very descriptive. They know exactly what's going on as soon as it's coming out, and we will continue to do that. I know that parents and teachers alike they love hearing his voice coming across because they feel that commitment from him, and they realize that this is as important to him as it is to everyone else because they hear his voice coming across. We're getting the message out with phone calls, text messages, email. We put it on the website. You'll see possibly social media, Facebook, Instagram. We found out just recently that information can be distributed very quickly over Facebook. We've known that for a while. And maybe it's our turn to start playing that game as well. I've actually got a Facebook page and an Instagram account set up, ready to go. It's hidden. No one can see it. It's just going to be to distribute information, not to comment on information, but an opportunity for us to put something on Facebook that others who want to get the word out can share, and that way they're getting it directly from us as opposed to someone who may want to post something that could be somewhat inaccurate. So, and then as we've been doing throughout all of this, the communications will continue until every site is up. And as Mr. Cena has said, we are one organization. So when I send something out, even if it's just Dobbins that may be closed or just Loma Rica and Foothill, we let everyone know because we don't know which parents or which teachers have a student or a family member or something that's tied into that that may need to know. And we want to make sure that everyone's aware of what's going on with the entire organization as a whole all the time. So, thank you.
Good evening. When students are in school, we are committed to provide meals for them. We will be offering both breakfast and lunch any day that students are in school. We do have to work with the health department to ensure that the food is safe when we're needing to transport it from one location to another. So we work closely with the health department to ensure that they're familiar with my emergency plan and they know where the food is being prepared and where it's going to. Foothill Intermediate School is my current production kitchen for multiple locations. So when that school is without power, but the satellite locations are with power, then I have to come up with an alternative production location. So this last series of power outages, we relocated to Kynock Elementary School, and we produced meals there for Browns Valley. Kynock is a good location because it already produces meals for Cordova, so it's easy to piggyback onto that, what we already have in place. I relocate staff and delivery vehicles and notify the health department of the change. Moving forward, We have tried out on November 20th. I worked with the state to approve emergency meal service when schools are closed, and we got to actually do it on November 20th. We provided emergency meals to kids only at Loma Rica School and Dobbins School. It's essentially what we do during the summer program, and it's for any time students are not in school. We had small participation, but it was a good trial and good practice for down the road, and the families that came were very appreciative. Moving forward down the road, we have to address power to Foothill Intermediate School. Currently, the temporary power only supplies cold storage and not the kitchen facilities. And for East Marysville, if we were to have a power shutdown, my district warehouse storage facility is at risk, and we have a lot of inventory and daily receipts and deliveries coming out of that facility. So there's a lot of food in there, anywhere from 750 to 800 cases at a value of approximately $200,000. It's not really easy to move and relocate to another location. So we are working with Travis and Penny to look at long-term solutions in case East Marysville is potentially going to have a power shutoff in the future.
All right, so, sorry about that. So all routes will still run as normal, which our routes, as they run now, all pick up high school kids. So they still need to pick those kids up as they will be coming down here and going to school. We will easily bus the Dobbins kids over to Yuba Feather. We'll just use that same, we have one bus that goes to Dobbins now. They'll just pick up any additional kids at the school and head on to Yuba Feather. Evacuation routes have been established. There's a number of different ways we can use to get out of there. And the radio transmission tower is connected to the generator, so it will always be working. Even if it didn't, we would still just relay communication from bus to bus to down here, which we do sometimes anyways. And all buses have access to fuel. So I really believe that the most simplest plan has the best chance of success, and we try to make this as simple as possible.
So with the generator, we've obviously been looking at all different aspects and avenues of how to get these going. Currently, with the assistance of an electrical contractor, our maintenance department, we've done a lot of research in looking what our infrastructure is out there. We've now come to the conclusion of what size generator we need for each one of these sites. However, we are still going through the process of understanding like Yuba Feather Air Quality now has put restrictions on even generators. So at this point, we could buy these generators and they could say, you're not turning them on. So currently, we're still in the development stages of how we're going to go about this and reach our goals. You know, if we get to this point, we start putting generators in, we're looking at transfer switches, automatic transfer switches. So in the event that the power goes down, just like Yuba Feather, they will kick on. Going through this with Ms. Lawson, we're also looking at different avenues. If we're running into roadblocks, say with Yuba Feather air quality saying we can't put generators in, there's different options as battery storage, solar, things like that we can also look into. So as much as we continually want to move forward and go ahead and start putting generators in, we're still at the aspects of really trying to find the best course of action, because we obviously wouldn't want to be putting over $1 million into generators just to find out we cannot turn them on. So in the meantime, maintenance has gone ahead and looked into purchasing automatic lights for the restrooms and ensuring when the power does go out, at least they have a little time, motion sensors, they'll kick on, they'll kick off when nobody's out in there. But like we said, we're facing things like at Foothill where we have no air conditioning, no way to ventilate the building. It's one of our larger sites, so it's one of our larger costs. But again, we're still investigating on what the best course of action is going to be, funding sources, working with public agencies along with architects, civil, and all these different entities. So we're hopefully going to get to a point where,
you know, we have resolution and a direction in which way to go. But obviously, you know, you'll hear from the public and the community, just hook the generator up. You'll see now we have figured out what size we need, and you'll see these total estimates on costs. And these are just your hard costs. This doesn't include your soft costs, which include the design from an architect, DSA permits, and all these other things.
So once the specifications for the actual project come down, then we actually have how we're going to purchase it. And what this really is for us is really our timelines of what it takes for once the bid specs come, when we can actually put this out for bid and expect to see some progress here. I did list, since we are a CUPCA district, if it comes down to like things that don't have to be installed and they fall under the 92.6 threshold, we could just negotiate small towable generators, which we did some renting, which we would do that if we could, if it's cost effective, like we did to bring the our frozen warehouse here on the district, make sure it wasn't going to lose power. But as far as these other projects, these will be public works contracts, which will in excess of $60,000 and also $200,000 probably, and we'll have to do a formal bid. And, of course, once we do that, we'll bring it up to the board and allow you to see what the process is and how you bid on it.
Good evening. So what's the fiscal impact with the power shut off? Well, for the 1920 budget, we're anticipating no loss of revenue because we're applying for the J13 waiver application. It's all been turned into the California Department of Education, and it's currently under review. We're also exploring possible funding for generators. California Department of Education is working with the California Office of Emergency Services to fund generators for our Foothill schools. And we, Travis and Penny, have both already submitted the information, and we're waiting on some feedback. For coming up in the 2021 budget, we recommend that we budget come the spring for anticipated costs, like the generators Travis spoke about, and plan for that for next year. There's also been a fiscal impact on our nutrition services department. In the 1920 current year, they've experienced about a $22,000 loss of revenue from federal and state meal claims, a small amount of food loss, and then they've generated generator costs of about $5,000 for the rental and the contractor costs. For future costs in 2021 and the outgoing years, they're exploring for a 400-amp generator. We're still waiting on that price, but the contractor fee is approximate at $19,000. $19,000. And I think Penny's taking us into the next step.
So what we'll be doing next is continuing our planning. And I believe Travis had mentioned the lighting, water, toilets, et cetera. You know, just getting further exploring the costs and what that would look like. Continue to plan for the generators. And as we mentioned, building in the makeup days in the 2021 calendar so that if needed, we will make up days. And then we'll continue to give you updates on our progress, so that this stays at the forefront of everyone's thoughts, and we will be prepared when and if it occurs next year. Thank you. I'm really proud of everyone coming together and in providing all this information for you. So thank you to everyone.
I would just like to say thank you also to everyone. This is the first time I can ever remember having an entire team coming in and giving us a update on something that, and first you think about it, well, you have no electricity, so you have no site or no school. Kids are coming there, but it's amazing to hear all the people that it affects within our district. And having all the experts to come together and work collaboratively together to try to make sure we're educating our kids is fantastic. So thank you.
I have one comment quickly. My biggest concern would be Yuba Feather School, being that it's surrounded. I don't know if that's national forest or private land, but, you know, they've shut the power off in a high fire situation. That doesn't mean that they're not going to have a fire. I mean, if people remember the 49er fire, it was started from a homeless person burning some trash, and it devastated Nevada County. So is there an agency or who would look at the forest surrounding like Yuba Feather School to make sure that it's kept up the way it should be, that it's not overgrown and it's, you know, thinned out? And, you know, is there somebody that looks after that? Is there laws or rules pertaining to that around a public school?
That's great. Great question. We have been in contact with the United States Forest Service in that area up at Yuba Feather. With our ground supervisor, he heard back, I think, last week. They're collaborating on how to clear that area. They're not saying we can cut trees down, but they're being cooperative and going forth with our ground supervisor to find out how far we can clear, at least make sure the brush around the area is cleared up. As far as removing trees and things like that, they're not keen on cutting the trees down, but they seem to be very supportive and open to the idea of trimming some of that brush back, getting some of the canopies of the trees lightened, things like that. So we did get in contact with that entity, and we are now in collaboration with them to try and come up with a game plan on how to clear that area.
Any questions? Oh,
also, just to let you know that up there at Yuba Feather, Mr. Taylor and the bus, when we enter this one of these shutdown, as soon as the PG&E says, hey, there's notification that maybe a shutdown in a certain amount of time, there's three buses that will be parked up at Yuba Feather for emergency evacuation. Students, staff, everybody will be loaded up. Bus drivers live right up there. Mr. Taylor and his team have set it up. And the people at Yuba Feather are all on the same page.
Anything else? Okay, the next item, number four, 2020 Summer Deferred Maintenance Project Timeline. Mrs. Lossing?
Thank you. I was just going to introduce this this item because it may not be typically how we go about approving projects, which tend to be what I'd noticed is kind of one at a time. But we wanted to look at it more big picture and what can we afford and should we be planning for next summer, because construction timelines get really tight. And so now would be the time to bring forward what we would like the board to approve for summer projects for 2020. And so how we did that is we determined the highest need based on projects that would increase in cost for future repairs if they aren't done soon, things like roofs and paint and so forth that can really cost a lot more money if they're delayed. We looked at the facility projects that have been identified by school sites and that they're deeming necessary to enhance our current learning environment, which is one of our goals. And then we had a collaboration between our building and grounds, our fiscal departments, and our purchasing departments to ensure that all areas were addressed for the construction, the budget, and the delivery timelines. And then I also neglected to include that a big part of those collaboration meetings was maintenance as well. I guess that falls under building and grounds, but Supervisor Trower was involved in that. And so the rest of these slides are examples of the projects. Not every project on our list is on the slides, but then on the sheet, we've identified the project, the site, and it's all by site, school site, or like the transportation roof here. It's by site, and then the project, and then the funding, because we have different areas of funding that we've identified to use for these projects, and then with purchasing the delivery method so that we have a timeline. And then I'm going to let Travis take it from here, or Mr. Barnett.
Hello again. All right. So this slide is just kind of give you guys an overall idea. You'll see when we're looking at the proposed project list for the summer, this kind of gives you an idea of some of the school sites, of the shade structures. I've kind of broken it down by a total cost of $379,000 for these six schools for shade structures. You'll see that they're not your huge metal shade structures you see, but they're more of the canopy type, as you'll see on the left-hand side there. Linda Irrigation, this site has gone without automation. The ground's hard. It's potholed. Kids are out there getting hurt. It's a very big cost. However, it's been neglected for a long time. It does need to be addressed. It's been one of those things on deferred maintenance that we've put off for many years here in the district that needs to be addressed. The idea there is to have, full automation, new irrigation lines installed. It's an actual pretty extensive project. But again, it's been put off for so long, we're proposing to get it done this summer. Foothill School generators. When you're all in, hard and soft costs, we're probably looking at $1.8 million. I've given you some examples, Yuba Feathers there on the left. That's kind of your stereotypical site of what you would see out here if we're doing this. In the middle, that's what your transfer switch looks like. And on the far right, you'll see that is a fairly large generator. I know it doesn't look like it in the picture, but it's a pretty good size. But these are some of the things we want to get in motion, maybe not this summer, but it's something that we just wanted to put out there to know that it's it could be a potential cost that comes up. Our HVAC replacement, these are some examples we wanted to throw out there so you guys could see that the ductwork out here, some of these units have met their shelf life. So you'll see at these three schools, we're doing six replacements at Covalade, eight at Ella, eight at Oliver, so with a total of $302,000. Again, this is maintenance that has had to be put off due to budget constraints, but we are hopeful that we can get these projects approved and start getting motion on them to get them in order to be completed by the end of summer. Exterior painting. These are some more examples of the paint that you'll see at many sites. Doug has identified, our maintenance supervisor identified Ella and Kynock as being the top two for this year, for this summer, to go ahead and paint the entire exterior of the schools. But as you can see in the slides, we have these type of issues all throughout the districts. It's not just these two sites. So as we move forward, you'll see it in a kind of a plan of summer 2021. You'll see more of these projects come up, but we're just kind of giving you an update of saying this is how we're looking at it, what we're seeing out in the field. Marysville High School boys locker room modernization kind of gives you an idea. You'll see where we're at right now. There's a lot of safety concerns, the students getting hurt. We're hopeful with utilizing the new delivery method of the piggyback contract that was adopted today that we might be able to expedite this project and have this done by summer. As Brian said, a delivery option of a piggyback allows us to move projects, quicker and procure faster turnaround on this project. So we're hopeful that maybe we can get some of the toilets replaced, lighting, maybe an epoxy flooring in there, and all the lockers will come out, new lockers will be put in. We've worked with the site administrator and making sure that the layout is conducive with a safe environment for the students, because we've heard there's a lot of issues over there. Roofing repairs are extensive throughout the district. This is just the first crack at it for summertime projects. You'll see just more examples of what we're looking at as Penny touched base on the transportation roof to the right. I could do a complete slideshow specifically on just roofs and painting if we wanted to look at it, but this is everywhere throughout the district. So Doug's been working with many different consultants to go out to these sites and identify and make a roofing plan to identify and start getting these things taken care of. But currently these are the four sites that we deemed are the most high priority to get finished this summer. But this isn't just, there's a lot of roofing. So when we start looking at our summer project list, you'll see in the summer 2020 list, we've broken it down, as Penny said, with the purchasing method, funding source, and the anticipated cost for these. So
We can go through there and you guys can kind of see what it is. You'll see that we have multiple funding sources, different pots of money that we're going to get through with this. I've brought Doug in this evening as well to stand by because he's put a lot of work and research. So he's here as well to answer any questions as when we go through. Doug has done an extensive job, his footwork, to go out and write down what he sees these issues at the site and to really be an integral part of creating a priority list. So between facilities and maintenance working hand in hand, these are kind of the lists we've come up with. So with that, you know, we'll go to the conclusion with Penny. Are you good? All right. So, you know, we recommend that the Board of Trustees approve the summer 2020 project plan as presented. Keep in mind the approval excludes the Arboga TKD expansion project. And adjustments to the plan as needed shall be brought forward at future board meetings. So you'll see that this is a working document, and with the help of other departments, Doug, Penny, and Mr. Cena, as we go through and we identify, as we know that these lists are ever evolving, whether it's a generator, whether it's a chiller that goes down, whether it's a flooding track, this is almost a work in progress. So we'll do our best that we can to present this on a year-by-year basis, but currently to get things kicked off for the summer projects, it is crucial to get these things approved now so we can hit the summer deadline and start getting these things peeled off and get moving. But as I said, just know that we'll continue to build this list and take into consideration stakeholders, sites, administration on what needs to be done next.
Thank you. Comments?
Travis, I would just like to ask you, you said it's very crucial. How crucial do you need a vote from the board?
Currently, in order to get a lot of these projects taken off, there's, as you see the price on many of these, we're at the $670,000 price range on some of these. So we have to get scopes of work created. We need to also procure our delivery method, whether it's using a piggyback contract or if it's going to go to informal, formal bid. So we have to start preparing for summer, which means we have to create the scope. Some of these might require us to go to architect firms for design. Procurement with roofing, it's not just a simple roofing repair. There's different methods in which we have to procure with that and go with public contract code. So a lot of these things aren't your simple replacing a carpet. So we have to be ready to get scope of work and start scheduling the work ahead of time. Because if we wait past usually February is your kind of your cutoff for wanting to go out for bid for things or start procuring contractors as the summer schedules get filled up in February. So if anything is going to happen in summer in the construction, maintenance, operations, facilities world, we're actually planning by February. Otherwise, you're going to pay a premium if we wait. The price goes up exponentially because now if we want it done, we're paying that premium so it goes to a higher bid. So we want to be earlier to procure the best price.
All right, because I just like to take it and look at it a little bit, you know, before I do that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Are there comments?
Travis, in looking at the list, I looked at the bottom line. It said $20 million, but there was $3 million that said the funding was to be determined, and that concerned me when I looked at that.
Well, we did add in the approximately $15 million that included the TK-8 expansion, and so your approval would exclude that. So it's the balance of that, and then the to be determined pieces. Well, that was the amount that would be determined on the Marysville Charter Academy for the Arts, and I had a note at the bottom here that the concrete foundation and sitting wall was designed, but the cost estimate of $247,000 for that seemed to be pretty high for the return. So our maintenance department was exploring a less expensive option for that project, for MCAA, thinking that if we could value engineer it, it would save funds for other things like roofs and paint that seem to be more critical than the, you know, they do have a need, but I believe the $247,000 design was probably a little bit too much. And let's see, another to be determined was, Oh, this would be a, we know that Cedar Lane needs a ball wall, but we don't have a cost for it yet. And then the Dobbins Elementary parking lot, we put that in because it needs to be done, but that's also something that would be more of a 2021. And our goal eventually would be to have this be a 5-year deferred maintenance. So these out years that aren't populated will become populated so that we have an ongoing prioritization of all the facility and maintenance project needs of the district. But this, in the time amount of time that we had and what we've done so far, collaborating, we've developed a projects committee that includes the facility and grounds, including the supervisor of maintenance, fiscal director, and our purchasing director, to ensure that all the various components of a project are addressed and that we're working collaboratively together to be the most efficient we can for the district and get these projects done, you know, as timely as possible and as less expensive as possible.
So, Penny, is it true, is it important to have this type of list approved so we can start looking to try to get some matching funds down the road? Is there a requirement maybe to have something of that nature?
These are smaller projects rather than more capital improvement types that would qualify. These are really smaller, more deferred maintenance. And some of you may remember that we used to always maintain and be required to maintain a 5-year deferred maintenance list. And the state would match funds that the district would contribute from the general fund to the Deferred Maintenance Fund 14 every year, and it was hundreds of thousands of dollars. But that all went away with the local control funding formula, and now we're required to pay for deferred maintenance out of the funds that we received from local control funding formula or whatever other manner we can. So it's in the best interest of the district to go ahead and reestablish the 5-year deferred maintenance so that we can plan ahead.
I would think also, Penny, that it's important because I would think down the road again we're going to maybe try to go out to the voters for another facilities bond for our district. But if we can start showing the public that we're using our funds to try to make our sites better for the educational process, I think that there could be a lot of help with that.
Well, the state facility construction bond that's on the March ballot for $15 billion is going to require an updated 5-year deferred maintenance plan and an updated facility master plan from every district that is going to apply for state matching funds using that bond money. So this is kind of us getting a little bit of a head start on that as well.
Any other comment?
I guess the one question, but, you know, sorry, Travis.
That's okay.
Is the prioritization process. I know a lot of these shade structures have been on the list for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm certainly hoping that they stay higher on the list to help these kids during these hot spells of our summers. So I know you do your best with the money and time and staff you have, but it would be very helpful if you could help us understand the prioritization as you move forward with your 5-year planning.
Absolutely, and that's what I was standing up to talk on behalf of, is a lot of these shade structures, I want to say maybe, time flies, it could have been 7 or 8 months ago, was brought before the board for approval with PBK Architects to go ahead and start getting the ball rolling on these shade structures. The way that these projects came to light was that when Mr. Hodson was here and he was acting CBO, he went out to each site and asked each site what their number one, you know, if they needed something, what was it? And that's where a lot of these projects came up, and the shade structures. At the time of Mr. Hodson's position, it was brought before the board to approve the shade structures for at least the design, path of travel, which we've got all that cleared up, DSA approved. So a lot of the shade structures you see in here have already been DSA approved and passed to the architect, and all we're waiting for now is procurement and installation. So that is how that list came to fruition. As far as when you talk about, as Penny touched base with MCAA, the reason why you see some of those costs come in, because it was presented as, if you could have anything you wanted, what would you want? And that is how we came up, you know, with this $250,000, you know, granular idea. Well, at the time when Mr. Hodson was here, it was granted to say move forward with that project. Now, with Ms. Lawson now at the seat and Mr. Trower, and we're all sitting here trying to find out prioritizations, funding sources where you see the to be determined, we're kind of whittling it down and being financially responsible to see how far can we stretch our dollars. And that's where Doug's been, like I said, an integral part of helping us prioritize and really giving us the feedback. If a site wanted a shade structure, but really there's a sinkhole in the middle of their parking lot, are we going with the shade structure or fixing the sinkhole? So we've deemed that these projects that are slated for 2020 can move forward, in our opinion, not without the board's blessing, but could move forward based on our assessments, based on pulling purchasing and having our kind of our project committees look at them. So nothing's really just kind of been thrown out there. It's been kind of a vetted process. So, again, a lot of these projects were already voted upon with PBK Architects. They've given us plans and designs to move forward. Now what we're asking for is to take those plans and now start purchasing the shade structure and start procuring the contractors to install them.
Which we can use the piggyback contract that you approved today, tonight, for the shade structures.
Any other questions or comments? If not, I'll entertain a motion. Motion to approve by Mr. Davis. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Fleury. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? One opposed? Ms. Scott? Oh, and two opposed. Mr. Allison and Ms. Scott? Okay. Two opposed, Ms. Scott and Mr. Allison. Motion carries 5-2.
Thank you.
Okay, number five, first interim budget. Ms. Lossing.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm pleased to present our first interim budget update. And we'll look at the budget cycle, which I believe you're all familiar with seeing. We'll talk about what's new with our first interim. We'll compare revenue expenditures from adopted to first interim. We'll look at our unrestricted fund balance. We'll review the multi-year projection and notice that our fund balance is decreasing each year in that. And we'll look forward and then our next steps. So this is a little bit different take on the LCAP budget cycle than you're used to because I color-coded it by year. So you'll see the current year are all of the blue circles that started with the budget adoption in July, first interim in December, which is what we're at right now, and then second interim in March. And then actually the June should be half green and half blue because we get our estimated actuals, our final look at this year's budget when we adopt next year's budget. The green circles are all looking forward to next year, which we start doing in January. And then we have our May revise, and then we adopt in June. But then I put in the orange because in 1 year, we actually look at three different years of fiscal numbers, and that was the closing of the books from last year. And so that happens in September. So I kind of color-coded that so that you could see the difference and help you understand that these numbers tonight are us looking at from the adopted budget in June for this year and then comparing to where we are right now. So our books are closed from last year, and that gives us actual ending fund balances that we add to this year's budget and carry forward, you know, site budgets and so forth. All of the changes since the adopted budget are included, and that also typically school districts adopt their budgets for the new year before the state enacts its budget. And typically there's some little tweaks in there as well that will incorporate all of those adjustments into this report. So we change, also when we adopt our budget in June, we're estimating an awful lot of positions that change that Mr. Carrion certainly knows, and then we may not know of all the retirements, new hires and so forth. And so by now we've identified and updated all of that position control to be more accurate for this year's budget. And we also include any current and the projected negotiated settlements of salary and benefits as well. And then we create a new multi-year projection, because that's what we use in the County Office of Education, which is our budget oversight organization. It's what they use as well to determine our financial condition, which is positive. So going right into comparing the revenue on the unrestricted general fund, from adopted, which is the first column of numbers, to what's current, the middle column of numbers, and then noting the difference. So it was real negligible difference in our main amount of funding on the local control funding formula. I think it was about $11,000, so it didn't even really generate a difference. There wasn't any change on the federal revenue because that's mostly restricted. See, and this is the look at unrestricted. State revenue went up a bit, and I'll describe the details of these changes in the next slide. So I look at the big picture here, and then we look at the details of that on this slide. Just kind of shows you the COLA percentage change from when the governor first proposed the 1920 budget, and then what was enacted, see, the 3.26%. There's the $11,000 on the local control funding formula. We did receive a special education early intervention allocation when they enacted the budget, and it's close to $1 million for us. It's $829,000. Approximately, and it's one time currently. There's discussion at the state level that to make it ongoing, but of course they have to be able to afford that. So right now it's one time money, and we are planning to use that for special education facility needs as we have some program changes occurring. Moving on, we added lottery, we added a bus grant, we added some miscellaneous for the total of $1.4 million additional dollars from enacted budget to current. And then here is a look at the expenditures. It's, nice round numbers to make it easy to review. And the change in, our typical objects are our certificated, our classified salaries, the employee benefits. We have books and supplies, which are our material goods that we buy, and then any services, contract, consultant, operating expenses, utilities are all in that. Our capital outlay, we added some facility projects being budgeted, and then other outgo. So that made a fairly substantial increase in our expenditures, as you can see, $5.8 million. Big picture look at all of this, because we have our detailed, you'll always remember that we have our detailed SACS reports that's very in-depth. But this is our components of ending fund balance, which always to remember that any of these amounts are one time in nature, meaning that once it's spent, it doesn't get replaced. So you wouldn't ever use ending fund balance for something ongoing, like ongoing salaries or ongoing any type of expense that would repeat every year. So looking at what's important here is to basically just see that we have unassigned and appropriated $13 million there. And then this moves us right into the multi-year projection, which, as you'll see, that 24.6 on the unrestricted ending balance here, well, when we look at the multi-year projection, we're looking at this year. The first column is the 24.6, and then we're projecting out whatever changes we're assuming in revenues and expenditures. And we appear to be spending more money than we'll be receiving. One of the reasons for that isn't included in here, but that you should be aware of, is that while the local control funding formula has been in place, I want to say about 5 to 6 years now, we had always been striving to reach our target, and the state has met that target. And so from now on, starting last year, it's just COLA increases. It's not that that move for additional supplemental concentration grant funding that's actually about $23 million to us, that over 5 years we receive that extra money because we have so many needy students, that 81% that generates that. So that's one of the reasons that our revenue has flattened. And we're the same as every other district in the state, unless you're basic aid, which, they're wealthy districts with high property taxes, that actually their property taxes are more than what the state amount would be. That's what basic aid is. But anyway, so revenue has flattened. And so this is just a graphic of, what this looks like. So this is telling us something here. And I wish my first presentation was better news. But the thing is, because we have sound reserves, we have time to address this. It is not a panic, but it is definitely something that we need to address. And so these are the assumptions that we use when we build the projection, and it's based on what everybody else, every other school district uses from School Services of California. They're our liaison between what the state legislature and budget says and what that means to districts. They give everybody these numbers, so everybody uses the same apples to apples for comparison purposes. And as you can see, the pension rates, the STIRS and the PERS each year, so this year and then the next. And then just of note, the STIRS rate for 20-something years, as I've been in school business, the first 20-something years, it was always 8.25%. And so that's on every dollar. So now that it's 17%, all of that is on every dollar of certificated salary. And then PERS has always been higher, but now, and you'll see by 21-22, it's up to a quarter of every dollar of classified salary we're paying to pensions. And the state hasn't given us extra money for that. So here's a little bit of another look and reason why this fund balance is decreasing. And this is, again, it's not anything about, in my mind, nothing about mismanagement, nothing other than the fact that our costs are increasing faster than our revenue. And the special education contribution, you can see from $9.8 million last year to $11.9 million this year. That is not an unusual increase. Other districts are experiencing that across the state, and that's one of the reasons they had supplied that additional $829,000 for special ed, but it came to us unrestricted, and it came to us unrestricted, and they because they've analyzed it, they understand that school districts are being severely underfunded. It's nothing to do with us not having an efficient special education program. We have a very good special education program that is efficient. The state is not giving us enough money to fund it. And then our PERS and STERS, those are Jennifer. And I wanted to say thank you to Mrs. Pasalia. I forgot that, because she does a wonderful job with all of the fiscal and accounting. Her team is amazing. And they actually are responsible for all the numbers and all the reports. I just get to put it together and speak about it. You can see here where those pension costs have seriously increased. In 1 year, look at the amount, $4.73 million between special ed and pension costs, just like every other district in the state. And so looking forward, obviously we're showing a deficit spending this year, and we may see less of a deficit when we get to the second interim, because right now we're just the 3 months or so into the year for this year's budget. As we continue to get actuals on the year, we can tighten our budget and make it much more, or more accurate. The more of the year goes by. And so second interim, it could be that would decrease some. And that's another thing that you'll always hear me say, that the budget is always changing. If it's revenues, it's the amount of attendance percentage we receive for every students in and out for the revenue. And then how costs fluctuate on all kinds of things. And we have thousands of budget accounts. So the budget is always changing. We take a picture as of October 31st and look at it for first interim. We take a picture January 31st and look at it in March for second interim. And then when we get to estimated actuals, we can be even that much more accurate, because most of the year is done by then. But here, again, it talks about why the deficit spending. And then, of course, too, we have our negotiated salary increases in there. And our employees very much deserve cost of living increases. It's not anything to do with that, but it's, again, the fact that the state's not providing us enough funding. So with the multi-year indicating an ongoing structural deficit, and that basically means that on an ongoing basis, it appears that we're going to have more expenses than revenue. So we want to begin to plan and have discussions regarding our need to either increase our revenue through possibly increased attendance percentage, because that's one way. I'm going to find out what the 1% of attendance increase would equal, and it's going to be hundreds of thousands of dollars. But I know everyone is working on that. And then also perhaps decreased expenditures, whatever we need to do to balance our budget so that we don't continue to eat away at our reserve. And our next steps will be Mr. Greco is working on LCAP meetings. We coordinate with the budget and LCAP meetings. We'll continue those. In January, we get the governor's proposal for next year's budget, as you remember from the budget cycle. And then in January's board meeting, we'll start that. We'll have a budget agenda item to start to address that structural deficit, and we want to use an inclusive process to do that, to engage our stakeholders too. It'll be education for them on the budget, and then input from them. And then in March 2020, we're on to the second interim budget report. So I know that was an awful lot of information, and you've had a lot of information this evening. So thank you, and I'm glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mrs. Lossing. Questions? Comments?
Well done. Excellent.
Thank you.
Yeah, I would like to say thank you to Jennifer and your team for getting this all put together. And,
yes.
And Penny, one of the things you talked about was trying to increase students. And I truly think by what we have going in the district of improving our educational status and being able to improve our sites to make them look nicer, I think is going to attract more students. So I think with all the work that our teachers are doing in the PLC process and improving our product, I guess you could say, I think it's going to be very helpful for our district.
Thank you.
No other comments or questions? Is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Davis. All in favor say aye. Any opposed? Motion carries, 7 yes. One thing I would like to say before we close, it is very important that you see Lisa to sign some documents before you leave the room today. Anything else? Meeting adjourned.